This is the Apartment Building Investing Podcast with Michael Blanc, episode 27. Let's go.
You're listening to the Apartment Building Investing Podcast, where we'll talk about all aspects of buying apartment buildings with a special focus on raising money from others. And now, your host, Michael Blanc.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the show. Today, I have with me Drew Niffen, who just able to share some success with us. He got his first 32-unit building and was able to quit his job. And I love stories like that. What I love even more is the road leading up to that. It wasn't one of those, you know, do it in a year. It took him 5-6 years to get there. And that's always what we teach is this is a lifetime sport, and it's going to take a while, but man, does it pay off. So I'm really excited to talk about that. A couple things first is if you haven't done so already, download my free ebook called The Secret to Raising Money to Buy Your First Apartment Building. It's a really cool ebook, downloaded thousands of times. You can get it at themichaelblanc.com. That's themichaelblanc.com on the website. You can also get it via text message. So you can text the word secret to 38470. 38470. Just text the word secret to 38470. And it'll respond with a link to the ebook. All right. Also, if you don't mind, leave me a review on iTunes. I'd love to read those. Also, does great for the show ratings. So let's continue on with the show. So it's always good to hear from people who achieve massive success very quickly. I mean, I have people on a show like Joe Fairless, you know, Go Big, in episode 10 and also 23. Michael Becker in episode 17, who went from 0 to 1,000 units in essentially 12 months. I mean, nuts. So those are great to hear, but then it's sometimes also good to hear from, you know, more average people. When I mean average, I mean, these are people who have full-time jobs and they start small and they're maybe a little conservative, maybe more cautious, okay, but they still want to change their lives. And, you know, and what they have all in common, both the think big and the slow and steady, is that they're all taking action each and every day. So I'm excited to talk with Drew, and he just recently closed on his first large multifamily deal. It's a 32-unit deal, and last week he just quit his full-time job. It's awesome. So not unlike my podcast with Jay Boyle, it took him 6 years to get there. He started out small, buying a couple single-family houses, then duplexes, some quads. What's interesting is that he partnered early on with a more experienced investor. Not much more experience, but a little more experiences. Had a little bit of money. So he teaches us how to partner with someone to get into the game. So he's another great example of slow but methodical growth. So he's a little more conservative, but very intentional. He admits that he struggles with limiting beliefs, which is something he's working on, and he sees raising money as a big challenge. He just, even though he's got this 32-unit, he doesn't feel quite ready to take people's money yet. So the real honest, you know, investor in the trenches, and I think he's a perfect example for us to emulate. He just takes small action each and every day, doesn't dream outlandish dreams, and hits a bunch of base hits. You know, but after hitting base hits for 6 years, he finally quits his job. He's supported by his current real estate that he has, by his wife, and by the confidence that he can increase his portfolio in the next 12 months or so, that he can replace his entire corporate income within the next 6 to 12 months. What an awesome session. Let's get into it right now. Hey, Drew, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Michael. Glad to be here.
Well, I'm really excited to kind of dig in on your investing career because it started a little while ago in 2009, and it kind of started a little slow maybe, took a little time. You had some small deals in there, and then and then this year you actually bought a larger building, around 32 units. So I can't wait to dig into that. So before we get into that, just tell us a little bit about you, about yourself.
Sure, absolutely. Well, I'm out here in Seattle, Washington, and been here for a year and moved here from Minnesota. And so the investing story kind of follows that path. As far as kind of education and background, in Minnesota, I went to grad school out there, and I did both law school and an MBA out there, and was doing sort of the corporate track for a while. And as I was doing that, I sort of stumbled into the real estate. And so my real estate, as you mentioned, started in 2009. And slowly progressed from there, mostly in Minnesota, and then I'm beginning to do most of my work out here in the Seattle, Washington area now.
Yeah, cool. So tell us a little bit about how you even got started investing in the first place.
Sure. So my first deal, as I think I've heard many people say, was sort of an accidental landlord deal. My wife and I, we bought a condo in Minneapolis in 2005, and even then I built a spreadsheet and I was like, the market only goes up at 15% a year and we're going to make all this money. And we all know where that led. And so we got to a point where we wanted to move out of it, but we were underwater on it. So I said, let's rent it out. And so we did rent it out, and it's a wonderful building, and so it attracts tenants very easily. But through that accidental experience, I was able to sort of come face-to-face with the numbers as far as someone paying down your mortgage and creating a little bit of cash flow. And that was sort of my aha moment, and I said, well, this is really amazing. And so since then, I studied it a lot more and eventually had the capital and some of the sort of the bandwidth to grow it from there. So that's how I initially got into it. And then since then, I bought a couple more small units, a single family residential, and then a duplex. And then, as you said, this most recent year, I was able to partner up with two other guys that also had some other experience and jump up to the bigger space at a 32-unit building.
So we'll get into that in due time. I you know, a lot of times we jump right to the big success story when in fact it was a success story, you know, made over many years. And so recently I really wanted to, and people really, especially people that are starting out and want to get into it, they want to see, you know, not how you got to your, you know, from 100 units to 1,000 units, but, mm-hmm. you know, how did you really get into this stuff? So I want to drill down on this a little bit. So you were in this condo, you were upside down, you decided to hold on to it because you couldn't sell, you put a tenant in there, and you made a comment that this is the first time you were exposed to the power of real estate. What was it that you realized about real estate at that point?
Well, I mean, it is a very powerful vehicle. You're leveraging your capitals, you're putting down 20%, and then you're getting the other 80% from a bank. You know, in for a regular business, it's hard to get that type of lending. But in real estate, because it's secured by the property, that's powerful. So that was impressive. The cost of capital is relatively inexpensive as well. But then, as I said, the tenant is paying down your mortgage. You're getting the depreciation on the property, which is, it's a non-cash item, but it significantly influences your taxes, so it's able to have some significant tax benefits. You're getting cash flow in good scenarios, so it's putting in your pocket every month. If you get it's relatively, it's not time, I don't want to say it's not time intensive, but it's something that you get on a passive basis. So you can have your day job and be doing this as well. And so I saw that, and I thought it was very powerful, and that's what made me intrigued and made me want to learn more, was those attributes of leverage, low cost of capital, tax benefits, and monthly cash flow. So
yeah, that's fantastic. Now, but so an accidental landlord is one thing, mm-hmm. but at one point did you decide to pursue real estate as an investment strategy?
Sure. So one of my best friends from Minnesota, during the downturn, he was able to pick up about 5 or 6 properties that were within a block or two of him. And they were all homes that were similar to his. We had a high level of confidence that he could rent them out, that they were good quality. And this is while I was in grad school. So I couldn't do it myself because I didn't have any income, didn't have access to capital. But I was seeing him pick up these properties at fantastic prices, getting wonderful cash flow, and the equity appreciation of the properties were also amazing. And I just saw him do it firsthand, and I could ask him the granular questions step by step, you know, what was your analysis, what do these look like, how do you handle your tenants? And so I was able to see up close and personal what he was doing, and so that kind of primed the pump for me to want to get into it. And then as soon as I had a little bit more capital, I missed the perfect window when prices were really low, but I was still able to move into it. And seeing someone else do it up close and personal, and that was before the podcasts were really popular, such as yours, but seeing someone do it, someone that I trusted and I could ask the right questions, really sort of helped me overcome that barrier that you might otherwise have of actually taking action.
Yeah, so this is something you saw before you actually rented out your condo, is that right?
I think I had rented out my condo simultaneous with him doing it, but I saw him growing his business, and I was sort of captive to that one accidental landlord deal, and I wanted to grow it, but it was through him that I was able to make that, or through watching him that I was able to get the excitement to go do it myself.
Now,
in a bit.
Now, and what was your goal with all this stuff? So you saw this other guy pick up some properties, and you're like, man, this guy's making some money with this stuff.
Yep.
You know, I could probably do that too. But what were you thinking? What did you want to achieve with that?
Yeah, I think initially my thought was get a couple single families, because that was the limit of my exposure. And I figured only, you know, REITs were getting into large apartment buildings. And I figured that those were really sophisticated guys and I could never compete with them. And so my thought was that it would be a supplemental business, maybe on the side, three or four or five single families to complement my full-time day job. And so that was my initial perspective. And it was kind of the limit of what I was exposed to. So that was my initial vision was just maybe a handful of smaller properties.
Gotcha. So in your mind, you're like, hey, this is pretty cool on the side. Buddy does it, and let me just do it. So okay, that's what you decided. So what happened next? You rented out your condo, and it sounds like you started looking for some smaller stuff. What did you go about? What did you start doing then?
At that time, I started looking at distressed properties that were on the MLS. And then somehow I came across the idea of HomePath, which is a website where Fannie Mae is sort of trying to offload properties that they've taken title to. And I came across a single-family home that was a few miles from my house and was at a decent price. And I said, you know, just the numbers seem to be really fantastic here. And I said, let's go from just thinking about this to taking action and doing it. So I bought that first one. That was my first intentional purchase. That was a number of years later, I think 2013, and it worked out wonderfully well. And so that one really whetted my appetite because, you know, I was purposeful about pursuing that one. It worked out well. And so that as I said, it primed the pump for me going after future deals right after that. So that was the next one.
How long were you looking for properties before you bought this?
I think it's hard to say because there was a time period where I was just kind of every day for fun, you know, instead of looking at Facebook, you're kind of just cruising the MLS, just kind of imagining or daydreaming. And then actually what happened was our nanny lived on the other side of town and she needed somewhere that was close by. And she was perhaps going to quit if she couldn't find a place that was close. And so that kind of got me more focused on actually looking at something to sort of solve two problems at once. Mm-hmm. And then I started looking more carefully. And then I found this one maybe a month after, you know, intentional, very focused looking.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you were looking for this house. You know, you got a good deal. You decided to go for it. Mm-hmm. And how did that turn out?
It turned out really well. It had basically been made turnkey by Fannie Mae when they took possession of it. The one caveat and the thing that turned away some other buyers from it was that there was concerns about the structural integrity of a wall in the basement. So when I bought it, I had a structural engineer look at it. He said, you got to brace it in such a way. I had a carpenter go ahead and follow those plans. I got him to certify on his letterhead that it was, in fact, a structurally sound wall. I got it appraised I bought it $110,000 and I got appraised at about $155,000 a few months later. So, mm-hmm. I think that one aspect scared away some people, and I've been able to rent it at about $1,300 per month since then. Mm-hmm. And it's always been full. So when I look at it on a return on investment perspective, it's worked out really well and it hasn't been a maintenance challenge. It's worked well structurally as well.
That's awesome. So what happened after that?
What happened after that was that friend of mine that I told you about, we at this point started saying, let's do some work together. So we started to really look at what could we do together. And also at that point in time, he had a friend who had just quit his W-2 position, his regular day job, because that other friend, this third party, had been building up a property management business on the side. Mm. So all three of us decided to team up together and look for some deals.
Yeah.
And so, let's see, with that first friend of mine, we bought a fourplex together, mm-hmm. and we bought a sixplex together. So that was the two of us together. And then with this third friend, all three of us together, we bought a triplex from a wholesale Miller, and we're able to improve it a little bit and get it appraised for a much higher price. And using the equity that we built in that property, we took that equity and used it as part of a down payment on this 32 unit that I mentioned to you. So it was some leapfrogging with some small multifamilies, and then taking the equity that we built up in this triplex to help us with the down payment on the bigger building.
Yeah, so that's fantastic. So you, at this point, you're starting to partner a little bit with your friend, and that allows you to get into some of these.
That's right.
Doing more deals and maybe a little bit bigger deals. Cool. So you started getting into some of these partnerships, and how did you structure them?
So each partnership is structured based on the people that are involved. So there's one LLC for me and my friend, the two of us. Then there's a separate LLC that holds the properties that are owned by all three of us. Sure. And so right now, each one of those has two properties. One has a 4 and a 6 unit, and the other one has both a 3 and a 32 unit.
Mm-hmm. And how did you guys split up the profits? Did you just do kind of split everything three-way, or depending on how did you guys do that?
We've tried to keep it pretty simple. So the one is 50-50, and the other one is one-third, one-third, one-third. So we haven't tried to get more... We haven't tried to make it any harder than it needs to be. So
that's awesome. So it sounds like you're chugging along doing this thing on the side. You have a few threes, fours, sixes, and then the 32 unit was next after that, right?
That's right. That's right. So, you got it.
So you're doing these little things, and you're looking at smaller ones. And at one point did you decide that you wanted to look for larger stuff? When did that start happening?
I think it was a combination of just realizing the power of scale, as well as the partnerships, which made us feel like we had the experience and the know-how together as a group to tackle something much bigger. And so a big part of that was partnering with this friend of ours who, you know, is a property manager and has had a lot of experience with larger properties, and someone that we trusted to all team up together, kind of link arms and tackle a deal together. So I found that the partnerships was really helpful to give us the confidence to pursue that next level that we wanted to get to.
That's cool. And this third partner was a property management company. I presume then they're also managing the building.
They are.
Yeah, yep. That's cool. So how are they charging you? Are they giving you a wholesale price? Are they not charging the partnership anything? He's making his money on the distributions, or how is he being compensated on the property management side?
He did give us a break on the purchase, the broker's fee for the purchase of the property, and then his management fees are good as well. We have no placement fees, of course, and it's just a general low management. And the other nice thing about the structure is because he's both the manager of it but also the equity holder, his interests are aligned with ours as far as managing or optimizing the rent numbers, keeping the expenses low. We know that he's looking at it the same way that we are because he is positioned how we are, not just as a property manager but also as an equity holder.
Cool. Let's talk about that 32 unit then. How did you find it?
It was the property manager. He has, you know, he has a more access to deal flow. And as he and all of us were discussing different properties, this one came to his attention and he said, "Hey guys, this looks good. You know, it's hard to find properties with this quality of build, at this type of price." And so, it was his awareness through being in the property management space 24 hours a day or 7 days a week that brought it to our attention, whereas I probably would not have seen it on my own.
Yeah, that's right. Now, why did he want to bring on you guys as partners? It sounds like he's pretty much well-positioned to do deals himself. Why did he consider bringing you guys on?
Capital. I think other sets of eyes on the deal, obviously, on some level, even at this point today, are not raising capital from limited partners. We're not structuring things in that way. So to bring in 20% to, 1.5 plus or minus purchase price building is $300,000, and he by himself didn't have that to take it down. So all of us partnered together as well as that triplex that we bought from a wholesaler and put equity into it and improved the value of it. That was how we were able to get to the point where we could get the down payment for the asset.
Yeah, that's cool. So it was basically you and your first friend and the equity from the first deal you guys did together.
Yep.
And the property management basically brought the deal and will manage it. But he did not bring any of his own money into the deal?
It's not quite correct, Michael. It's basically close. He didn't bring any of his own actual cash to the deal, but on the side we gave him, so we put forward all the cash, but then he signed promissory notes saying that he would pay us back so that once those notes have been paid, he will have put an equal one-third into it.
How about that? That's very clever. Excellent. That's very creative of you guys to kind of pull that off. So, yeah, that's awesome. And what was the – tell us a little bit about the deal itself, the purchase price, any renovations, what your business plan was.
Yeah, so it is – I would call it a class C-plus, B-minus property. It's 32 units in the Twin Cities. It was about a 7 cap rate, and we bought it for it was listed at $1.7 million. We walked through it and found some things that, you know, concerned us as far as the boiler and the age and some work that needed to be done, and were able to talk him into just a shade above $1.6 million was the purchase price. Mm-hmm. So it worked out to a little bit more than $50,000 a door, which is a good price for a very rentable property, very low vacancy in this part of the Twin Cities. And the business plan has been to we want to be long-term holders of it, so we're not just trying to reposition it and sell it in 3 years. But we're trying to improve it as an overall asset, and so we're not taking monthly distributions at this point. The operating cash flow that it's producing right now, we're pouring back into the building. We're rehabbing some units, making them look nicer, updating them, as well as some of the common spaces as well. There's some very old and sort of dingy laundry facilities on different floors. We want to improve that as well and make that another source of revenue for us. So the business strategy is to improve the asset. There's a lot of room for managing the expenses better, as well as it was genuinely under market as far as the rents. So there's value to be created both on the revenue side as well as managing expenses side, together, which, of course, you know, can improve that NOI. And the value of the multifamily space is that when you improve that NOI, you're in control of your destiny as far as building equity into the building. So those are some of the things we're looking at in the building.
So on the rent side, can you give us an idea of how much higher you think you can raise the rents over the years?
Yeah,
$25 a month, 50, 75 more.
It's about 50 mm-hmm. per unit, and that requires some of them require putting some money into them. Some of them just need very light cosmetics to sort of improve that. But about $50 a month on those. If you take that 50 times 32. I can't do the math off the top of my head, but imagine it's $1,500 a month times 12 months gives you $18,000.
Yeah, that's right.
Somewhere around there. So
you've created like $200,000 of value.
Yeah, so it is really, you know, I remember one of the things that started moving me toward the multifamily space was when I sat down and I think I listened to a podcast or I read some article on the leverage or the multiplication factor behind if you can increase rents only $50, you do that times 12 months, and then you take that extra cash flow and you apply it to the cap rate, and you can create some tremendous value. And that was just very exciting to me. Yeah. And so it is one of the things that nudged me toward this larger space.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So what's next for you guys?
I think that for us right now, we actually looked at another 36-unit building that was nearby, and so it was the same sort of math and same sort of market, and it was just priced a little bit too high for us to make sense. We couldn't come to an agreement with the seller. But we're interested in doing units like that or buildings like that together. At the same time, there is an element of, there was a learning curve when, you know, you buy your first single family home, just to understand it, get your mind wrapped around it. And you never want to get out too far ahead of yourself in an uncomfortable position. And so I was able to move into the larger multifamily space once I really felt like I understand how it worked on the smaller property size. And to be honest, right now there is still a learning curve of what do larger built, you know, for me at this point, a 32 unit is larger. And how do those operate? What numbers should I expect? And also, because with the single families, I was managing them myself, I'm now getting to understand how do you work with a property manager? How do you understand the financials? What to expect from them? And so that is something that I need to get better at and more comfortable at. And as I get more comfortable with those things and this size of properties, that'll increase my confidence to go ahead and load up for the next thing, the 36 or the 50 or the A unit, whatever we can find through our work together.
Yeah, what do you think is your big challenge right now?
Well, I think it's a great question, Michael. Access to capital is a huge challenge. That is, I think, for everyone. And so far, I've done deals that are always basically self-funding, and that's self-limiting when you're self-funding, because very few of us just have hundreds of thousands of dollars laying around. So that's an obvious limitation. But something else that's come to my mind just in the last few weeks, honestly, through listening to a few of your previous podcasts, is the idea of limiting beliefs, is the idea of being confident that you can do big things. And so I've really had to challenge myself, why do I think that I need to stick at 30 units or 20 units? You know, what are the things that prevent me from doing 100 units, and are those things overcomable? So to answer your question, number one, it's access to capital. But number two, it's thinking big and then not letting the obstacles be things that you don't jump over, but figuring out ways to jump over those.
Right. Well, let's talk about each of those challenges, because you're absolutely right. A lot of people share those challenges, and one of them is access to capital. And how do you feel like you're going to overcome that challenge? You might not know the answer to that, but you might have an approach in your mind.
I think the approach that I have in my mind right now, Michael, is to ultimately pursue reaching out to friends and family and doing a capital raise. But to get there, my feeling is that, you know, obviously friends and family are people that you care about and you don't want to let them down. You've spoken about that before.
Yeah.
I need to have confidence myself that I know how to manage a deal, that I know how to find the right investment partners, and that I know the mechanics, ins and outs, financially and legally, that I can with confidence look people in the eye and say, I will do well with your capital. You can trust me with it. And I think I'm partway there, but you care about managing your own money, but I care even more about managing other people's money. And so that's ultimately where I want to be headed toward. But I feel like I have a little bit more education and experience to have myself with my own properties, my own capital, before I can go out to people, look them in the eye and say, you should hand over $25,000. I have the experience and the confidence and the right deal to get a healthy return for your trust with me.
Yeah, exactly right. So, no, I think it's a very realistic approach. In your mind now that you've done the 32 units and you're seeking to kind of expand the possibilities in your mind, right now as you sit here, what are kind of your goals for the next, say, 12 months and then maybe 5 years?
5 years, that's far out. I think for the next 12 months, it's to do two things, and I actually sat down and thought about this a lot just over this week. On the one hand, it's to build what I call a platform business and to have a core operation of units that produce cash flow that are all my own. These are smaller units, maybe sixplexes, fours, singles, that have a high, you know, cash-on-cash return, but they're not as easily scalable. So I want to build that up, maybe 20, 30, 40 units in one specific area here within the Seattle area that I think has good returns. So that is my platform business. It kind of is what put bread's on the table, and it's for me to keep, you know, my own life funded. Alongside that is because I moved here relatively recently, and the Seattle market numerically is just very different being on a coast than in the upper Midwest in the Twin Cities. So alongside building that platform business is understanding, getting exposure to, speaking to property managers and property brokers about the larger multifamily space here so that I can get educated and so that if and when a deal comes along, I know it's a deal and can pursue it. So in the next 12 months, that's the goal, is build that platform business and get educated and aware of where the opportunities lie in the bigger multifamily space.
So if I get this straight, you have kind of a medium long-term goal, which is a larger multifamily. And yep. In the meantime, you want to build up a portfolio of smaller units kind of to get that minimal cash flow out of the way.
That's right. Okay. That's right. You're correct.
Okay. Awesome. How many hours a week are you spending on this, by the way?
Well, it's a great question. I just ended my regular W-2 employment at the beginning of this week. And so that has freed me up to think more strategically about my time and put my energy toward where I want this business to go. Previous to that, I was just very constrained with my time. So right now, my plan is to spend, I have some, personal obligations as well, but to spend, I would say, 20 to 30 hours a week pursuing this business.
Now, can I ask, why did you quit your job? Is it because of real estate or some other reason that you were able to quit?
Well, my wife and I both work, so that enables me to be a little bit more opportunistic with how I plan my time than other people might be. So that was one factor, but also I have been able to reach critical mass would be maybe too large of a statement, but I've been able to reach a point in my real estate where I have enough confidence in what I'm doing and the number of deals that are out there to believe that I can quickly get to the point that I need to be to feel like this is a substantial, real business. So the other part is, it's sort of like you have to push yourself out of the nest to learn to fly, and I was just you can be so comfortable that you don't take the real estate serious enough until you really put yourself in position to focus on it, put your time into it, and build it.
Yeah, that's right. So it sounds to me like there's maybe a little bit more of a master plan behind this stuff, Drew, honestly. I mean, were you thinking of quitting your job and quote-unquote retiring early? Was this always a goal? And if so, when did that kind of start in your mind?
Well, I think it became more attractive, and I sort of flirted with it more and more as the years have gone on. As I've seen the potential in the business, as I've talked to people who have actually done it, it became not just something that other people do, but something that was achievable for myself as well. So it's been growing over time. Personally, there is just some things with raising a family that just made the idea of being able to control your time so much more attractive than having to tap dance to someone else's instructions.
Yeah, that's awesome. So when people always ask me, hey, how do I get full-time into real estate? I want to quit my job. One mm-hmm. of the things I always tell them is you have to address your living expense scenario. You can't just – and you can do it in a variety of ways. You can live off savings. You can do something or work a less demanding job so you get the time. On hold. That was weird.
I'm sorry. It looked like a phone call came in to me and I declined it, but then it –
Yeah,
that's
weird. It was like on hold. Okay, so
I'm sorry. You
said something. All right, here we go. That's my visual cue for finding it later. So that's real interesting, Drew, because when people ask me how to get into real estate full time, I tell them they have to address the practical aspect of that, which is addressing your living expenses. I mean, mm-hmm. just quitting your job cold is not very realistic. You can do it if you have maybe savings or you have maybe to take a less demanding job, or like you said, your wife is able to support you. And so what you've done is you've taken a realistic approach. You have your wife who's still working. You have some real estate income. You don't probably have the real estate income that you would like, but you have a certain level of confidence that you can create that over a short period of time. And that's allowed you to kind of jump and dedicate full time. So that's awesome. And the other thing I heard you say is that you and your wife are on the same page about this. So yeah. It's also very important.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, all the things you said there are right, Michael. You know, first of all, there's no one-size-fits-all plan. It is very custom-tailored to each person's situation. And I've spoken with other friends about this, and because of where they're at in life and their situation, it's prudent for them to stay in the full-time job and build this up more slowly, because you can't take too much risk. I think it's the right decision for us, but it is a personal decision. And then second of all, it is really family-wise, it's a team sport. It's a risk that you're making together to move into it. And so, there's enough challenges as there is in building a real estate business. If you and your family aren't on board with that decision, that introduces just a lot more tension that is not necessary. And so it really has to be a team decision that's, talked through, and that people are on board and there's consistent, careful communication about.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I find this to be true, and I also find the opposite to be true. If only one person is all gung-ho about real estate and the spouse or family is not, it becomes not impossible, but very difficult. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And one thing that I found on that is that sometimes I can look at the numbers and get so excited about it, and so I get an internal confidence, but I don't take the time to stop and articulate or sort of draw out in a presentation or just kind of show the math to my wife and say, this is what I'm seeing, this is why I have confidence. And when I have stopped and done that, there's more like a, oh, okay, I'm on board, that makes sense. So sometimes we can get so caught up in seeing it ourselves and just getting excited about it, yeah, but not laying out the fundamentals that would bring that other party on board about it.
Yeah, that's right. That's cool. Have you had in your career or life kind of had a special aha moment that kind of stands out for you?
Ooh. So coming out of graduate school, I was fortunate to work for a great Fortune 500 company, and they treated me very well. And it was, in a sense, the dream job for most of my classmates coming out of graduate school. But in my experience, I guess I felt like I wanted to have more decision authority than I was given. I was sort of just I just kind of wanted to start out on top. And I felt like I had to, play more office politics and be kind of in the middle of decision-making rather than have authority. And I just felt like I had a lot more to deliver than what I could right there. And with real estate, when I bought that first single family, every decision was crystal clear. There wasn't politics to work through. There was just numbers and my own analysis and my own capitals on the line. And I loved how crystal clear the issue was there that was presented from me. It wasn't a sort of a fog of office politics and being nice and water cooler conversation. Mm-hmm. So that distinction between what real estate provides as far as authority and your own capital at risk and putting your money where your mouth is, and the experience that I had at a really great company, but just fundamentally when you're in a large multinational company, it's just there's more, gray area. That distinction for me was an aha moment that really tilted me toward, gosh, I think I have the ability to do this. I want to prove it to myself, and I want to go for it on the real estate side. So that was a sort of an aha moment for me.
Yeah, that's interesting. So did the thought occur to you that you really actually maybe liked working for yourself?
Yes, and I was so I just drank the Kool-Aid in graduate school as far as, you got to get the great job with the brand name organization or the brand name firm, and then if you kind of put in your time, it'll go great. And then there's truth to that. But over time, I got a little bit disillusioned with that, and you know, I had another friend that had his own full-time job that he worked for himself for, and the control over his time that he had, and the sense that he just had to do what was important for advancing his business, not for his reputation or his name within a company, was just so attractive. And so, not out of graduate school, but over time, I came to realize that sort of self-employment or building my own business was where my passion and my abilities were the most prominent.
Yeah, that's so cool. And I don't know how old you were when you figured this out, but I was 35 until I figured it out. And I was like, man, you know, because my dad, my family, was, you know, he worked for IBM for 35 years,
yep.
You know, bless
yep.
his heart. And I really didn't
yep.
know any better.
Yep.
And, I want to expose my children to it earlier yep. in life. That doesn't mean they're going to be entrepreneurs, but at least mm-hmm. that way they have a better basis for making that decision and exploring that lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, it was, I mean, I'm 35 now, so it was just a few years ago that I had this aha moment. But it was, my exposure was, my father as well as my father-in-law, both of whom I love, you know, were kind of full-time, corporate men or career men. So that was, you know, you're fish in water. That's the environment you're used to. And so that's kind of what my default yeah. mode was. And then sort of the scales came off my eyes and I said, wow, this is a whole different avenue, but it came very attractive to me. And it's, what I'm very excited about pursuing.
Yeah, that's awesome. So is there any time that you failed and what did you kind of learn from that?
Yeah. Honestly, my first single family acquisition out here in Washington State has been, there's been some definite turbulence in this deal. So I was really gung-ho out here. I had a little bit of cash burning in my pocket. And so, which is a great problem to have and doesn't happen very often, but it happened. And so I bought this single family home. I bought it out of foreclosure. And I was kind of so excited to get property in this new location that I'm at that I sort of just bought it without having a strong plan for what the plan was to take it from its current state to renting. And so I didn't have contractors lined up. I didn't have a solid evaluation of the property. And so it's taken more time than I imagined and more cost than I imagined to get it to a point where it's rentable. So it still turned out okay, but the lesson there was don't get so excited about an acquisition that you don't take the time to have a sort of a careful analysis of what you need to do and a plan to make it a financially viable acquisition. So that one's going to turn out fine, but it's been a much rougher process than what I've gone through in the past, and it's been a learning experience. So that would be my biggest mistake, I would say, on the real estate side so far, and it's been a very sobering lesson.
Yeah, it's cool. Speaking of sobering lessons, if you could kind of speak to your younger self, you know, 7-10 years ago, what would you advise yourself?
Well, with perfect hindsight, and I alluded to this before, I would say take a step back from what your environment is telling you is quote-unquote success and ask yourself what your values are and where your experience and your talents lie. So I think that I got caught up in the idea of trying to get the right job out of graduate school and that drove me a lot, and I didn't step back and say, is that actually what I want? Is that the lifestyle I want? And it was fine. It was good. And again, it was great company, but I wasn't sort of I wasn't following my own compass as far as the things that mattered to me the most, being able to have that financial independence, have that time with my family that is really important to me. I was just doing what was, you know, cool in the eyes of my general social community. So I would tell someone to step back and really say, what is important to you and then how do you achieve that? And that might be going a different direction than your peers.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And I kind of call that drifting through life. I say the vast majority of people simply drift through life and they do whatever comes next, what everybody else does around them, and no one really thinks about what they do. And I was certainly guilty of that until I was at least 30 before I started developing an awareness about myself. I just did whatever. Mm-hmm. Everything kind of came easy for me. You know, it was kind of good grades, good, you know, got a good job, but I never really sat back and, like you said, evaluated, hey, man, what is that really what I want to be when I, you know, and just taking the time to reflect. That's so true.
Yeah. Yeah. Not, you know, not, One of the things that's very attractive to me about some of the real estate community that you can find online in your local real estate investment group, your REAP, is that you find people that are very intentional about your life. And I find that very sort of inspiring and encouraging. There's one phrase I think I may have heard you say in the past, but lifestyle design, and the idea that you can craft a life that you want instead of just muddling through life, I think was your phrase or something like that. And that to me was like a jolt of coffee in the veins, very invigorating. And we're on a journey to move in that direction, but it's been something that's been very motivating for me.
Yeah, cool. Any kind of favorite books or anything like that that really made a difference in your life?
Well, I think the paradigm change for me is the book that many people talk about as far as The Rich Dad, Poor Dad. So at the risk of just kind of saying what other people say, that book was very influential for me. It wasn't sort of brass tacks as far as step one, step two, step three.
Right.
But it did say, listen, there's two different fundamental ways to look at the world. There's sort of be a good employee, put your money in your 401k, and that does work well. I don't want to speak negatively of that, but there's a whole other world that you can pursue, and I hadn't seen that before. So that book just kind of, it gave me insight into this whole other way of looking at things. That was very powerful. Yeah. And then the book that was more granular, step-by-step, was The Millionaire Real Estate Investor by Gary Keller.
Yeah.
And that kind of laid out step-by-step, almost kind of numerically, how you can go from, call it $20,000 in your pocket to buy that first property to the, sort of the what I would call kind of a cash snowball. So those two books together, I think, really started me down the path.
Yeah, it's interesting you said that Rich Dad Poor Dad. It's often overquoted, but it had a similar fundamental effect on me when I was never really I consider myself highly intelligent, highly educated, and had everything figured out. And I read this book, and I was like, man, I had the ladder up against the wrong wall.
Yeah,
it completely like startled me. It slapped me upside the head. Mm-hmm. And it's a very simple book, like you said. It doesn't really tell you much, but just the perspective shift. Saying, mm-hmm. Here's what we're all doing. I'm like, that's exactly what I've been doing. What's wrong with that? And then, well, let me show you another way. And it was just, it was mind-boggling to me. So
right. Yeah, it's kind of a visionary book, not a step-by-step book, but it accomplished its goal for me and just really made me kind of question and think about things differently. And I don't think I'd be where I am today without having that book kind of question my suppositions or my assumptions going into my career.
Yeah, that's awesome. What kind of parting piece of guidance do you have for, people who want to get into apartment building investing? What would you tell them?
I think I would say that if it's scary for you to do it by yourself, then you don't have to do it by yourself. Partner up with other people that have experience or something. They have something where you lack, and you have something where they lack. And coming together, you have two sets of eyes on the deal, and you build that relationship. You can pool your capital together. That's how I got into it. I don't think I would have bought a 32-unit by myself because it would have been too intimidating. The risk would have been too great. But you sort of de-risk the asset by pooling your money together, pooling your minds together, and pooling your skills together. So that together you make a stronger team.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, Drew, I really appreciate your time and sharing your experience with us. If people want to get a hold and find you, what's the best way to do that?
I do have a profile on Bigger Pockets over on biggerpockets.com, so that'd be a great way to reach out to me. Otherwise, I'm happy to share my email address with anyone if they want to reach out. I may regret that, but it's just my name.
Yeah, I can put it up on the show notes.
Yep.
And
yep.
If you guys want to get a hold of Drew, just visit the show notes, and I'll tell you where those are, and that way people can get in touch with you.
Oh, that's great, Michael.
Drew, listen, I really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Hey, thank you. It was really a joy. I enjoyed it. Thanks so much.
All right, what do we learn from this discussion with Drew? Okay, several things come to mind. Number one is set the proper expectations. If you want to, and this goes for anything, not just apartment building investing, but if you want to change your life, I mean, transform your life in a meaningful way, whether it's losing weight or better relationships or whatever the case, or building a business, you can't do this within a few months or sometimes even a few years. You have to be set realistic expectations. You just can't do this overnight. Number one, have realistic expectations. Number two, start small, but start somewhere. Okay, so Drew chose to start with a single family house and then slowly started getting bigger and a little bigger and bigger. So start small, but start somewhere. Number three, take repeated action. Don't look for excuses because you have a full-time job. You don't have the time. Always take action. You know, number three or four, I don't know where I am right now, is, but learn to partner. You know, if you feel like you have a weakness in something, experience, lack of capital, whatever, look to partner with people. You don't have to own the whole thing. You can own a sliver or something and get yourself in that. As time comes, you'll own more and more of the deal because you'll be the one with the experience and you don't have to the partner. So what a fantastic session. Hope you had some great takeaways from that. And again, if you haven't done so, download my free ebook, text the word secret, you know, to 38470, and you can get it via text or go by themichaelblank.com. So really appreciate you listening, and I will catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Apartment Building Investing Podcast with Michael Blank. For more free podcasts, articles, and videos, go to themichaelblank.com. There, you can also download the free ebook, The Secret to Raising Money to Buy Your First Apartment Building. Till next time.